It is not located outside or inside. So the self-arisen mind is not located outside or inside. So it is unabiding and it is like space. So it has no origin. It has come from nowhere. So we mentioned that before. We mentioned that we think that it's inside the body, but when the body dies, the mind then still goes on. So self-arisen means it's not an object of investigation, and that nature is non-dual. For samsaric sentient beings, there's a perception of self and other, and that is the first confusion. Mind is actually non-dual, non-dual primordial wisdom. When there is a dualistic perception, that is samsara. So as we mentioned before, the realization of the nature of mind in brief, we can see it. When you look at your mind, we have analyzed now, is there a self or not? Do self and other exist? When you really see the mind, it is like space. And if you have some wisdom, some intelligence, you can understand that. We mentioned also before that Mipam Rinpoche, for instance, had said, from this perspective, from one perspective, it is extremely easy to realize the nature of the mind. Because it is there. So when you look at the mind as it is right now in this present moment, there is just a space-like nature. You can understand that there is no duality without investigating it at all. Sometimes when we begin to analyze, it just gets worse and worse. Then we begin to grasp, but some people have a more tendency towards grasping at there has to be something really there, or other people think that there is nothing there. But anyway, through this investigation, our thoughts just increase more and more. And that is why we say it's so difficult to realize the nature of the mind. So what it is non-dual primordial awareness that is self-arisen. And that awareness is the Buddha. There is no other Buddha than that. Then Buddha is this self-arisen, non-dual, primordial wisdom or awareness. So there's this name we give it, primordial wisdom. And it is called that because it has been there since beginningless time, since primordial times. Therefore, primordial and wisdom, because it is all-knowing. And it is always here, like space. So since time without beginning, it always has been there. It will always be there. It will always be here. It will always exist. And likewise, it exists right now. It is always there. Even if the world comes to an end, there's many worlds who always come to an end. This does not come to an end. So therefore, it is another example is that it is like an uncompounded space. It is uncompounded. And if something is compounded, it is impermanent. But this is uncompounded. So if there is a dualistic perception, then that creates the cause of samsara. Then there is meeting and separation and so forth. But this is uncompounded. Your true nature is uncompounded. During the empowerment, it also came up. We said, this uncompounded, spontaneously existing, spontaneously present. If you realize its essence, it is Vajradhara. It is never born and it never dies. Vajradhara, Vajra, because a Vajra possesses seven qualities of invincibility, so it is invincible and so forth. So it is never born and it never dies. Or in the Samantabhadra prayer it says, even if the three worlds were to be destroyed, there is no fear. There is no attachment to the five desirable sense objects within this unconceptual natural space, which is the natural state of the mind. Or we have said that within the expanse of primordial wisdom, all the Buddhas are one. All the Buddhas of the three times are one within this expanse. So if we can also explain it actually in very simple terms. Just one statement, one line can explain it very well. and that is, it's just one word actually, non-duality. When you attain enlightenment, all dualistic grasping falls apart, and that is really it. And that is just like a drop of water melting into the ocean, becoming indivisible. That is enlightenment. Sentient beings are like ice blocks floating on the water. Mind is like ice. We cannot see it with our eyes. It's not a material thing, but there is this sense of meme, and that is suffering by nature. And due to many unbearable sensations, feelings of pleasure and pain, one creates a body, one creates samsara. And samsaric existence is compounded, it is impermanent, and also it is empty of self-nature. It seems to be here now, next moment it is gone. So this non-dual primordial wisdom that is self-arisen, that is the single mind of all the Buddhas, wherein all the Buddhas are one. We have said that a diversity, many have one taste. So samsara and nirvana are all included within that mind. That means samsara and nirvana are actually not separate. It is important to clearly understand, to have a good understanding of the meaning of this term yishe, or primordial wisdom. So it says, please protect those who are bound no matter what they do by habitual dualistic grasping at concepts and so forth. So bound no matter what we do, it happens in our daily conduct where we perceive various sense objects. There's five or six sense objects that we perceive, and due to that, different kinds of consciousnesses arise. So when we are attached to the consciousness, the mind is drawn to form and sound and smell and touch and taste and so on. So the Samantabhadra prayer also explains how to settle the mind when this arises. So then when you perceive objects through the five sense doors, that perception generates six kinds of feelings or sensations that arise, first of all, due to a dualistic perception. So, for example, you see something and then you feel, this is mine, or that's his, or this is something to eat, this is something not to eat, and so on. And so this is how, according to the Samantabhadra prayer, habitual tendencies grow stronger and thicker in stages, gradually. So then, no matter what one does, one is bound. And that is mainly because we are unmindful. Because we are unmindful, we continue to cling to a dualistic existence. We are attached. We have an habitual pattern to attach. And that is what creates samsara. So bound no matter what they do, that, you know, you might be a practitioner, you meditate, you understand non-duality. When you are in meditation session, you might have some understanding, some experience of that. You close your eyes and sometimes it seems as though there's nothing there, there's no thought in your mind. And when you close your eyes, sometimes it even seems as though the body has disappeared or this whole room has disappeared. And then when you open your eyes again, it all appears again. And so this is how it becomes sometimes when we meditate, when there's no grasping in the mind at that time, when you do not grasp at sound and form and so forth. Everything just naturally becomes empty. And then again, our habitual imprints begin to arise. Thoughts begin to arise. Coarse thoughts of attachment and aversion, which you hold to be true. Things appear and then you think that that's real, that's how it is. For example, that's nice food, delicious. And then you taste it and you experience it. And actually, when you sustain awareness, you know that it's empty. Pleasant taste is empty, unpleasant taste is empty. Then the same is true for all the other five sense pleasures. It's an confusion, a delusion to believe that there is something inherently delicious or not delicious. So then, however, we cling. And then we develop, we reinforce this attachment and our aversion against the things we don't like. So these imprints become very solid, and then we grasp at anything. So it is said that in one's conduct, one must attain equal taste of the six sense doors, which means you're not grasping at any object as either being good or bad. You don't judge whatever you encounter. For example, food. You don't label it pleasant or unpleasant. You eat anything. Everything has the same essence to you. Nothing makes any difference. You just feel, you experience a sensation produced without any judgment towards it. And then a dualistic imprint will not be placed into your mind. So that is this goddess of non-dual mind. With mindfulness, you recognize that the attachment is delusion. And when you recognize the attachment, it will go away. And then the same is true for aversion. You recognize that it doesn't really exist. First of all, the object that you don't like does not really inherently exist. Everything that appears is compounded, is impermanent, is empty. So the inner grasping mind and the outer perceived object both lack inherent existence. Both are not separate, actually. So when you realize that, you will not develop attachment to appearances. Then you will develop a sense of contentment. Anything is fine. Whatever comes my way, I am content. This is what the Buddha had said. And that is when the mind calms down and you feel very relaxed and well. And then when an afflictive emotion arises, this is when you need to recognize. So you get afflicted toward a certain object. First of all, in the beginning, you might think that, oh, there's that person again, and he's hurting me. You get angry. But instead of doing that, as you train, you do not any longer look at what makes you angry, but as the anger arises, instantly you face inward and you look at the anger, that self and other, first of all, lack inherent existence, that the afflictive emotion itself does not really exist. So that is when you will recognize the true nature of the affliction, when you do not project onto the object of your affliction, when you just look at the affliction itself, the feeling itself. Then the feeling will disappear, the anger will go away. And that awareness that recognizes that, that is Tara, the goddess of non-dual mind. So when strong feelings of happiness and suffering arise, then recognize that with mindfulness, and it goes away through mindfulness. As we mentioned before, the omniscient Longchen Rabcham had said, when thoughts are liberated into their natural place, there is no need to abandon samsara. And also it is said that a sign of meditation is an absence of afflictions, which means the moment feeling begins to arise, you recognize it with clear awareness, and in this way it becomes liberated. So this non-dual goddess is mindfulness. Mindfulness must be upheld with stability. Also in Dzogchen, it is said, do not lose the stability of clear awareness. Dzogchen actually explains that really nicely. So when you get very angry, the moment you think, oh, this person, you get angry, the self has already given back support to the anger. And then it will only increase. Then there's already a self-other duality in place, and the affliction will only grow stronger. So without thinking self or other, without thinking anything at all, awareness only sees the anger. There's anger. And by recognizing that, the anger goes away. Actually, at the moment of anger, the mind is very, very clear, because when you're angry, you're only angry and there's no other thought in your mind. The anger outshines all other thoughts. So the anger possesses a special quality of clarity, which is why we also refer to it as the mirror-like wisdom. So when you recognize the true nature of afflictions, then they are actually primordial wisdom. Anger, for example, the same is true for all the other afflictions, desire or jealousy or ignorance. When any affliction arises, each and every one, you recognize it with clear awareness, you see its essence, and when you see its essence, it's already gone, it's already lost, because in fact there is no real affliction. So in brief, the view, sustaining the view means to sustain a state of clear awareness. And here in this context, we should recognize that this clear awareness itself is Tara's mind. So then in the next verse it says, Omniscient Mother Goddess, please protect those who have dwelt in the authentic truth, but do not understand the interdependence of cause and effect, and thus are blind to the meaning of what is to be known. So the meaning of what is to be known, or the authentic truth first. So first there is the authentic teacher, the Buddha Shakyamuni. There is the authentic teachings, the three vehicles. And there's also the authentic practitioners, those who develop true, authentic faith in the three jewels. So we take refuge, we enter the path, and we believe in the truth, the authenticity of the Buddha's words, which consists of two truths. So then that is where we sometimes run into some contradiction, because on the relative level we say that karma is unfailing, and ultimately karma is empty. And so also the other day we mentioned that the Buddha possesses a twofold knowledge or wisdom. And so also in the Chikten Sumgen's root verse in the Fivefold Path, we mentioned that the planets and stars of the two wisdoms will not shine. So the first wisdom is the wisdom that knows how things really are. And that is the Buddhas know the empty nature of all phenomena in samsara and nirvana. Then the second wisdom is to know everything in it, everything that exists. So even though everything is empty of self nature, if one engages in grasping, if one clings to arising thoughts, one accumulates karma, and then it unfolds the relative level. So if the cause is one of love and bodhicitta, what manifests are the pure lands, the Buddha forms. If the cause is self-grasping and afflictions, temporarily, like an illusory play, the six realms of samsara manifest. But everything arises from causes. So various conditions, various emotions arise, subtle and coarse, and they lead to subtle and coarse experiences in samsara. So here it says one does not understand the interdependence of cause and effect. So that is, even though we do have an understanding of karma, we also have some doubts. There is some people who actually do believe in the Buddha. They have full faith in the Buddha. They think the Buddha is true and authentic, and they take refuge. But then still they sometimes wonder, do the Pure Lands really exist? Or do the hell realms really exist? And then when we talk about bodhicitta, for example, they all recognize, they can appreciate that bodhicitta is a good thing. But then can we really attain enlightenment based on bodhicitta? So these doubts arise again. So here it says they are blind to that meaning. This blindness, that are all those doubts that constantly arise in our mind. When one actually realizes the view, then there is no more doubt at all within one's mind. And the view is something that we can only resolve for ourselves. We can only experience it ourselves. But then all doubts will fall apart. And so when there is no more dualistic grasping, then meditation really becomes radiant and unobscured. And then that is reflected in one's conduct. For example, we speak about the Samantabhadra conduct and so forth. There's many different kinds. But basically one has resolved the view, one has understood the natural state of the mind. And if one has not realized that yet, until one has realized the authentic view, all kinds of doubts will arise within one's mind. And therefore one will also doubt, not really understand the interdependence of cause and effect. And that really means that even the most subtlest of experiences has a cause. there is nothing at all that doesn't have a cause, everything. So even the most subtle experience of happiness, of bliss, has a cause, and that's bodhicitta. And even the smallest form of suffering has a cause too. So in this way, your trust in karma increases. You understand that on the relative level, all experiences of happiness and suffering have a cause. The cause are the afflictive emotions. Then we say on the ultimate level, however, karma is empty. On the relative level, karma is unfailing. So that again creates doubts in the minds of some individuals because there seems to be a contradiction here. But there is actually no contradiction because, generally speaking, of course, if the cause is hatred, for example, hatred is the seed of birth in hell, just naturally. But then if you recognize hatred when it arises, when strong anger arises, and at the same time you're able to rest within the natural state of the mind, then this, the essence of this anger, of this hatred, actually manifests as primordial wisdom or the mirror-like wisdom. And that is to say that anger does not inherently exist. And so how can we realize that? First, we need to understand that self and other do not inherently exist. That is the first view that we need to gain certainty in. And when you gain certainty in that view, then gradually the afflictive emotions transform into primordial wisdom, or then negative circumstances transform into supporting circumstances, conducive circumstances. So ultimately we say karma is empty. And what that means is that the cause of all suffering is self-grasping. So when you realize that there is no self and there is no other, you realize non-dual primordial wisdom. You realize that there is no really existing afflictive emotion. There is no actual self. Since beginningless time, you believe that there is a self, but today you understand, you see the view of Mahamudra clearly, and you realize that there is no self all along. Self and other do not exist. So if you realize that, then the cause, the relative cause for suffering cannot exist separately on its own somewhere. There's no more cause then, in other words. Then samsara is empty. Actually, samsara is already empty of self-nature. It already doesn't exist to begin with. So that's the ultimate view called the indivisibility of samsara and nirvana. That is when the ice block has completely melted and merged to be one with the ocean. There is no more dualistic grasping. So then, when dualistic grasping has become empty, there is also no separate cause that will remain anywhere. There's no, the cause has dissolved, disappeared. So this is something that ordinary sentient beings cannot understand, according to this verse here, and therefore they are blind to the meaning of what is to be known. Blind again means that there are various doubts arising in the mind. That is the blindness. And that ultimately comes down to not understanding karma. So on the relative level, karma is unfailing. That is, if the afflictive emotions remain within your mind, if you do not eliminate them, anyone will experience the ripening of that karma. Actually, Lord Chikden Sumgen had said that even if a bodhisattva on the 10th bhumi would accumulate negative karma, they would also fall down into the lower realms. Not that this would actually happen, but even if they would, then that would happen. So there's a lot of debate about that, actually, but in fact, what we are referring to here is an ordinary afflictive emotion. An ordinary affliction is an unrestrained affliction that sort of has a life of its own. And it arises, and we do not recognize it, and it becomes the cause of suffering temporarily. So we call it ordinary or unrestrained affliction because we don't recognize it when it arises. As it arises instantly, there is already a dualistic perception of self and other. So the moment a feeling arises, you already think that, oh, he did that to me. Immediately, you're projecting outward and you see the other object. And on the other hand, if you recognize the affliction, when it arises with clear awareness, this is an affliction, I'm afflicted, then the affliction will not take on a life of its own, but it will become controlled by awareness. And then we are not calling it an ordinary, unrestrained affliction. And this affliction can be transformed slowly into primordial wisdom, because you have already recognized that it actually lacks existence. So we need to understand how that is the case, how they lack any true existence. And so until we have realized that, until we have realized that self and other do not exist, it will be very difficult to eliminate afflictive emotions. Only when you realize that there is no self will you become free of all doubts. And until then, many doubts will always arise. And that is why we ask for protection, the omniscient Mother Goddess. Omniscience is the mind of all the Buddhas. It is the primordial wisdom that is free of all dualistic thought. The omniscient wisdom of the Buddhas pervades everything, the animate and inanimate. This is the true nature of the mind. And therefore, there's nothing that Buddhas do not know. And actually, this is what the Buddha had taught then. And nowadays, scientists, for example, are also analyzing the Buddha's teachings. And that's one quality of the Buddha's teachings. The more you analyze it, the more clear it will become. So the more you look into it, the more you will understand, the greater will be your trust, because the Buddha's words are unfailing and we can place our full trust in it. So then this omniscient Mother Goddess refers to someone who has realized the nature of mind or the view. Then one becomes omniscient, and that is what we have referred to before as the space-like nature of the Dharmakaya that is all-pervasive. Then it says, I'm having the unelaborated space-like nature from which everything is indivisible. Complete Buddha Mother, please continue to protect those disciples who are ordinary. As we mentioned before, the actual natural state of the mind is the basis of both samsara and nirvana. And the outer example we have mentioned is space. We actually mentioned this again and again. So when you look at this mind, you recognize the non-dual view. And that is when the dualistic consciousness becomes primordial wisdom. Milarepa mentioned, I do not see consciousness, I only see primordial wisdom. So then when you look at the nature of this clear awareness, its essence, it is empty, and it just becomes this natural empty expanse. And that's the nature of all the wisdom deities, no matter which deity you practice. And to represent the sameness of all the deities, all the wisdom deities are marked with the three syllables Om Ahung. Their foreheads are marked with Om, their throats with Ah, and their hearts with Hung. The Om at the forehead represents the essence of enlightened form of all the Buddhas. The Ah at the throat represents the essence of enlightened speech of all the Buddhas. And Om and Ah gather within Hung, the heart syllable, representing the mind of all the deities. So the Hung is emptiness, the empty nature of the mind. So now when we say self and other are indivisible, that is hard to understand in the beginning. So therefore we begin with visualizing the Hung that represents the empty nature of mind. And so when you meditate on the Hung, in that moment there is no concept of self, there is no concept of other. The nature of Hung naturally is without self and other. So it represents the mind of all the Buddhas of the three times. Therefore, if you wanted to practice or visualize all the Buddhas of the three times, you can meditate on the syllable Hung. Then there is no dualistic thought in your mind. And so for this reason, it represents the mind of all the wisdom deities, the wisdom beings. Regarding the Omma Hung also, yesterday we mentioned the Jigong Kagyu logo consisting of the Hung, the sun and the moon. It represents on the outer level the three jewels. So in that sense then the Hung represents the Buddha. And the Dharma is represented by the sun and the Sangha by the moon. And also this logo contains a liberation by seeing mantra, and it is that whoever sees this mantra just once purifies the negativities and obscurations accumulated in 300 million aeons. So these are the benefits of that mantra. Actually, when we think about it, if just looking at a mantra is so beneficial, then how beneficial is it to actually take refuge in the three jewels? How many obscurations can we purify? And so now, when you meditate on the Hung, there is a practice called the Omma Hung Vajra recitation. And for that, on the inhalation, you mentally think Om. And as the wind goes down to your navel, you think the wind goes down to the navel as you inhale. And as it reaches the navel, you think that sound Ah. And at the navel, you can also visualize a fire flame that has the nature of Ah, but it appears as a fire flame. And then for a little while, you may hold your winds just below the navel at the fire flame. But so anyways, today I will just give a few instructions for the sake of auspiciousness. There are instructions elsewhere, more elaborate, that you should definitely consult. So you inhale with Om, with Ah, you abide for a short moment at just below the navel, the fire flame. And also, when the wind touches the fire, it causes the fire to blaze stronger. So think that as you inhale and the wind touches the fire at the navel, it blazes stronger. So there's Ah, that's the nature of Ah. And when you exhale the air, think that you're only exhaling the stale, the old air, as you think Hung, but the force, the energy of the air, the wind actually melts with the fire flame at the navel, so it stays there. You're only exhaling the stale old air as you think Hung. And to represent the vital energy of the wind that has melted with the fire, you can also visualize a Hung inside the fire flame. And then it becomes like the wick of a candle. So the wick is the Hung inside the candle flame, which is the Ah. So you can meditate on the Ah and Hung together in this way. And once you have grown used to that, it is also fine if you just practice meditating on the Hung. And in that case then, you begin to feel, first it is in the navel, and then you gradually begin to feel how the Hung is a vibration that pervades all of your channels actually. And with each heartbeat or the pulsation of your channels, there's an experience of it pulsating or vibrating with the sound Hung. So this is what you gradually habituate to. But you begin with first focusing on the fire flame at the navel, the nature of which is the sound Ah. And so then you bring that into a day-to-day conduct. And finally, you can just meditate on that sound Hung that is vibrant and also luminous, pervading your body. So in this way, Omma Hung represent the enlightened body, speech, and mind of all the Buddhas. Ultimately, it is Hung. And it is said that within the expanse of primordial wisdom, all the Buddhas are one. So also when you're wearing this logo with the Hung sign, you remember the three jewels. And whenever you recollect the three jewels, there is no sense of me. And when there is no self, then there's also no karmas and karmic imprints. So in just one moment, the self has disappeared. Or, for example, when you think of Tara, there is no self. So it's all an antidote to self-grasping that is actually very powerful. So today I will just give a very brief introduction to that, but there is many more more elaborate explanations out there that I would encourage you to also find and read on your own.